Hi there. My name is Shannon Patrick Sullivan, and I'm the author of The Dying Days, a new dark fantasy novel from Killick Press, an imprint of Creative Book Publishing. You're listening to a podcast of an extract from Chapter 8 of the novel. The Dying Days is the story of a young man named Christopher Prescott, who accidentally learns that St. John's, Newfoundland is home to a group of people called the Five Clans. These folks still embrace the old ways of arcane deeds, strange creatures, and sinister pacts. Emma Rankin, a member of the Five Clans, brings Christopher to a gathering of her people at the bungalow in Bowring Park, only to discover that it is the site of a massacre. Joined by an investigator named Donovan Chase, who has an agenda of his own, Christopher and Emma try to find out what happened. There are many paths through Bowring Park. There are the obvious routes, such as the asphalt roadway which joins the most popular facilities. There are also well-groomed gravel trails which snake through much of the park, following the course of the Waterford and Southbrook rivers, or briefly darting through a wooded copse, or past a secluded flower bed, giving one the fleeting sensation of not being in the midst of a city at all, but rather adrift somewhere in the untamed wilds. Then there are the routes which would not appear on any tourist's map of Bowring Park, but which are well enough known all the same, and obvious to all but the most casual of observers. These are dirt paths, often crisscrossed by a labyrinth of protruding tree roots, created and maintained not by park staff, but by the passage through the years of many curious feet. Some of these trails are merely shortcuts between the park's myriad attractions, while others are most often used by lovers in search of a few moments' torrid privacy, or by mischief-makers trying to evade the eyes of parents or park officials. But then there are the other paths, those known to just a select few, that might be stumbled upon only by the most outrageous of chances. Most passers-by would not see a path at all, merely a narrow corridor between two bushes or a low tunnel beneath the bending trees, no doubt leading quickly to a dead end, or to a part of the park far more conveniently reached by other means. Most would walk right past these trails without a second thought, blissfully unaware that there was even a trail there to be explored. Donovan Chase knew of such paths, however, or at least of one such path. Walking at a sprightly pace, he led Christopher and Emma across the concrete bridge which overlooked the route, followed by the trains which had ambled through Bowring Park in days gone by, itself now a broad trail. They passed what many people still thought of as the new swimming pool, even though it had stood on the spot for decades now, and the burgeoning playground, which seemed so much more impressive than when Christopher had cavorted there as a child. Looking beyond the swings and seesaws, Christopher could now see the first glimmers of yellow-white light touching the Southside Hills, which rose mightily in the near distance to their left. The innumerable fir trees which bedecked their slopes were still visible, as little more than a solid black mass, but Christopher thought he could make out a hint of green now, as the monochrome of night gradually faded. Finally, just past the western entrance to Bowring Park, Chase turned onto a wide gravel path and navigated around a barrier erected to impede the passage of cars. Christopher was familiar with the route, having strolled along it occasionally in the past. To their immediate left was now a plunging wooded ravine, leading eventually down to the banks of the Southbrook River. At the point where the descent was steepest, a warning sign stood forlornly, warning passers-by to keep well clear of the crumbling edge. As they reached it, Chase extended his arm and grasped the slender metal post upon which the sign was erected. "Here we are," he murmured. "Here where?" Christopher asked, looking about. The trail continued on for quite a while ahead of them, and to their right was a densely forested area. Chase extended his walking stick, pointing down the precarious incline. "This is our route," he told them. "Are you serious?" retorted Emma. She was standing at the edge of the precipice. Loose dirt and gravel skittered down the hill into the river valley below. "Usually," returned Chase. Be very careful, he warned. You don't say, muttered Christopher. Tread only where I tread until we join the ways. Even then, follow close behind. We travel along dark and lonely avenues, and the going may be more dangerous than you're accustomed to. And with that, he readjusted his grip on the morbid package he carried under his arm and stepped over the edge. Christopher decided that the worst part of the walk down the slope was not the dizzying angle of the ravine, but the vertigo it induced. He tried desperately to just look at his feet, but his vision was drawn inexorably to the shallow river, which could be glimpsed in flashes through the gnarled and twisted trees which hugged the hillside, and he kept feeling as though the ground beneath his feet would give way at any moment, sending him careening downward. Fortunately, though, Chase seemed to know exactly where to step as they went. The earth was as solid and stable as if the invisible path they followed had been paved with flagstones. Only when Christopher did not follow Chase's lead precisely, stepping a few inches too far to the right, or extending his stride to a length greater than the smaller man could muster, did his footing feel at all precarious. He noticed that Emma, walking between Chase and himself, was having no difficulties at all in treading exactly where she was meant to. Chase led them along a frustratingly circuitous route, sometimes moving almost perpendicular to the incline, sometimes bounding virtually straight downhill, and sometimes even doubling back and ascending once more towards the gravel path they had left behind. On one occasion, Christopher found himself circling a dying maple tree, not once but twice, and began to wonder if Chase wasn't playing him and Emma for fools after all. He wiped his brow, now damp with sweat, as the emerging day renewed the ferocity of the heat and humidity. The sun had finally cleared the top of the Southside Hills, although it was barely visible through the lowering gray clouds which filled the sky from horizon to horizon. Christopher could sense the promise of rain in the air, but it was pent up, like an obstinate piñata which refuses to burst. As they continued on their wandering hike, Christopher became a little surprised that Emma had not protested at the seeming randomness of their route. Indeed, she had been completely placid for the whole of the journey, apparently doing nothing more than concentrate on where next to place her foot. And suddenly, Christopher realized why this was. The world around him had become a little darker. At first he thought the sun had disappeared behind a cloud, before he remembered that the sun had been masked by the clouds ever since its rising. Looking about, Christopher realized that it wasn't the quality of the light that had changed, it was the resolution of their surroundings. Everything had suddenly become a little blurrier, a little murkier. The leaves on the trees lost their definition. The sparse grass on the ground faded into a morass of green on brown and gray. And with each step he took, following Emma, following Chase, the phenomenon became more pronounced. Hold my hand, Christopher, Emma instructed. She reached back, though she did not take her eyes off Chase. Christopher obeyed without question. What's happening? He whispered. We're moving on to the ways, Chase called back. Christopher was surprised the man had even heard his comment. This is a seldom used part of them indeed. Remember, Mr. Prescott, you must keep moving unless you wish to be cast out of the ways. The places you might wind up from here would likely be forbidding indeed. Now Christopher found himself walking through a darkened void. He wasn't even sure what he was placing his feet on. It certainly didn't feel like dirt or rock, and he could no longer detect the steep incline of the hillside. Ahead of him, Emma and Chase floated in his field of vision, pallid and distorted, like images in an old photograph that had blurred down through the years. The noise of birdsong and the smells of midsummer flora had vanished too. They were replaced only by a faintly echoing, rushing noise, and a scent like a closet filled with mothballs, one that has just been opened for the first time in years. This isn't what it was like the first time I passed along the ways, Christopher said to Emma. This isn't what it was like any of the times I've used them either, Christopher, she told him, in an uneasy tone. The ways are usually brimming with energy. This road, it feels almost dead. Very apt, Miss Rowland, as you'll shortly see, Chase murmured. Now, be quiet, both of you. We don't want to attract any undesirable attention down here and keep treading close behind me. This is not a place you want to become lost in. Christopher gulped, wondering what Chase meant by down here. Somewhere, impossibly far away, he thought he heard a mournful wail and a noise like the ocean crashing against rocks on the shoreline. Occasionally, he thought he could make out vague shapes in the dark, a deeper black moving against the blackness to his right and left. He tried to ignore these passing apparitions and the low, insistent whispering that seemed to arise in their wake. Once again, Christopher reached up to mop his brow and run his hand through his matted hair. The quality of the heat had changed. It was no longer a cloying humidity, but instead an aggressive warmth, like that which infested the furnace room in his parents' basement. To make matters worse, no wind blew along this road. The air was stagnant and lifeless. After what seemed like an eternity, but was probably closer to 15 minutes, Christopher felt something change. He couldn't put his finger on what exactly was different, but he was gripped all of a sudden by a sensation of dislocation. It was still dark and hot, but in a way that was subtly altered from what he had been walking through just seconds earlier. He felt his stomach churn and spots flared in front of his eyes. He staggered, and Emma, who had been maintaining a steady grip on his hand the entire time, did her best to steady him. "It's okay," she whispered soothingly. "We've moved off the ways. We've arrived at our destination, wherever that might be." Christopher nodded, trying to steady himself. This trip hadn't been as bad as the first time he had traversed the ways back on George Street, but he knew that his body was still far from accustomed to the experience. He tried to take a deep breath and instantly regretted it. The stale air was now laden with something even more unpleasant. It was the odor of death. Not the kind of recent, pervasive death which had assaulted him in the bungalow. This was the scent of old death, of corpse dust, and of bones denuded of their flesh, of moldering shrouds, and of coffin wood long rotten beneath the earth. It was the smell that lingered long after the life has fled a mortal vessel. "Where are we, Chase?" Emma demanded, in a voice she barely kept from shaking. Chase's head was slowly panning from left to right, though Christopher had no idea what the man could possibly see in the darkness. Then he nodded and turned to them. He appeared to be fumbling in the pockets of his jacket. Christopher couldn't be too certain, because the weak, spectral illumination which had allowed him to see his companions during their trip was slowly fading, like a flashlight whose batteries have run low. After a moment, Chase found whatever it was he was looking for, and the smell of sulfur briefly assailed Christopher's nostrils as a match was lit, the sudden light dazzling before his eyes. He blinked furiously to try to clear his vision, and as detail returned to him, he realized that Chase had, rather absurdly, produced a stubby tallow candle, complete with a tarnished silver holder, from somewhere, and was using this to shed light on their surroundings. "Where are we?" Emma asked again, but this time her impatient tone had given way to one of incredulity. "The city of St. John's," said Donovan Chase, "has existed in one form or another for nearly 5 centuries. As the popular history books have it, it has endured savage frost, searing fire, and terrible pestilence. And it has experienced far worse things you'll find in none of those histories. Through the years, it has been built and rebuilt. It has expanded and absorbed, and many things have become lost in the process." He turned around again and held the candle out before him. Though the light it provided was not strong, Christopher could see that they stood in a cavern of some sort. The walls, ceiling, and floor were all formed of rock and hard-packed earth, leading off into the Stygian gloom. Tree roots, ancient and gnarled, protruded from the dirt, but so too did other things, and it was these that arrested Christopher's attention. For exploding outward at intervals from the walls and floor and ceiling, at every possible angle, were coffins. Or at least the remains of coffins, such was their unimaginable age. This is the Forgotten Cemetery, Chase intoned funereally. We're underground, Christopher asked timorously. Emma still hadn't let go of his hand, and he could tell that she was more than a little anxious, and that, in turn, was having a deleterious effect on his own frayed nerves. So it would seem, Chase acknowledged. Popular rumor has it that we're somewhere uphill from St. John's Harbor, below a parking lot or a business center or even the catacombs of a church. But I tend to have little faith in popular rumor. Christopher imagined the number of people who probably walked over the spot every single day without giving the barest of thoughts to what might lie just a handful of yards beneath their feet. For all he knew, he could well have been one of those people, once or even hundreds of times. I've heard of this place, Emma said softly, almost reverently. She was thinking of whispers she had heard during her time amongst the five clans. Mentions in barely remembered stories, allusions in the ravings of the old and infirm. I always thought it was just a legend. Chase shook his head. No, Miss Rowland, we live amongst folk who can live for 100 years without aging a day. People with the eyes and senses of a great bird. Men and women who can skim the surface of your thoughts as easily as a shallow pond. We don't have legends. We merely have things which have passed out of the common culture. Things which have been hidden, or misplaced, or suppressed, as our society dwindles towards inevitable obscurity. The last words were spoken with a mixture of bitterness and melancholy, unanticipated emotion from a man who seemed stoic, almost as a rule. Christopher wanted to ask Emma what he meant, but decided to wait until they were back in the open air. Chase handed Emma the candle, and then pulled the bundle out from under his arm, holding it gingerly in both hands. Now, he said, we mustn't tarry here too long. Let's be about our business and away. Okay, mumbled Christopher, not entirely sure what he was meant to be doing. Emma merely nodded. Chase looked around, his neck straining forward as if he were trying to penetrate the dark shadows around them without having to take another step deeper into the forgotten cemetery. After a moment, he motioned to Christopher and Emma to move closer, and as they did so, the light from the candle caught something large and oblong resting on the ground a few feet away. Ah, said Chase, and together they approached the object. Unlike the other visible caskets, which were all made of wood of varying quality, this was a stone bier, of such venerability that it almost seemed to be part of the cavern rather than a man-made object. Writing, or perhaps iconography, was carved upon the lid, but it had long since faded into illegibility. At some point down through the years, the sealant around the lid had weakened, and the slab had shifted slightly, exposing a narrow aperture. It was before this that Chase halted. He placed his swaddled burden on top of the bier and said in a clear voice, "You know why we have come?" Although Christopher could not see anybody else in the cavern, he had no doubt whatsoever that Chase was not addressing him or Emma. He shivered a little despite himself, and he and Emma squeezed their hands together more tightly. "You know why we have come," Chase repeated more forcefully this time. Suddenly, the candle Emma was holding flickered, although there was no movement of air in the forgotten cemetery, casting strange and unnatural shadows onto the earthen walls. Then, all around him, Christopher could hear a susurrant noise like the earth settling. In the silences, more subtly but more disturbingly, was another sound, which he could describe only as dry bone scraping against rotted wood. And in the conjunction of these noises, Christopher realized that he could make out words, low and mournful. "You come seeking knowledge from beyond the veil." "Yes," declared Chase, "vital knowledge, knowledge which may impact the very survival of the five clans." "But you are not of the five clans. You are apart." "I have their interests at heart nonetheless," the little man muttered. "I represent them, as does this girl." And he gestured towards Emma, who shuddered involuntarily.
"And what of the other?"
Christopher realized the voice was referring to him. Tag along, shrugged Chase. I needed a third, and he was willing.
Let him speak for himself.
I just want to help, Christopher offered lamely. I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't be here.
No. You alone are welcome in this place, Christopher Prescott.
Chase crooked an eyebrow. Really? He muttered. But the sepulchral voice continued unabated.
For you, we will abide by the precepts of the ancient rite. He who calls himself Donovan Chase may proceed.
Very well. We three have come, as tradition demands. Caead, Janak, and Idir. We bear the candle made from a condemned man's hand. Christopher blanched at the statement, and was amazed that Emma hardly flinched, but continued to hold the candle steadily aloft in her free hand. And the mouth of the departed we wish to hear speak once more.
Yes, the ritual is satisfied. Ask your questions, Donovan Chase, but do not try our patience.
I wouldn't dream of it, Chase responded straight-facedly. Ekna, of the people of the Caribou, he called out in an imperious tone of voice. Tell me how death befell you. Christopher realized that Chase was speaking directly to the blanket-shrouded form he had placed atop the bier. The candle flickered once more, and it looked to Christopher as if all the shadows in the cavern were converging on the ancient stone coffin. He watched with widening eyes as the object within the blanket appeared to move, almost imperceptibly. A small, jerky motion, like a mouth opening and closing against the folds of the cloth. And then another voice was heard in that place, one which seemed to come from impossibly far away, and yet which also emanated from the shape enfolded within the blanket. And that concludes this extract from The Dying Days. If you'd like more information about the novel, please visit shannonsullivan.com. Or look for The Dying Days in your local bookstore or online. The ISBN is 1-897-174047. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.